But when we started talking to many of these sustainability role models in Scandinavia, they said that we will never outsource our production to India because we will lose control on the supply chain. When we work with local production, we are able to control them very well. If we move the production to India or Asia, we have to keep on flying, and generally that is against our philosophy. And that triggered a thought that maybe we can bring a force of good by connecting the businesses in Scandinavia to do their production in India to do this. So we said that through data technologies, we can actually bring almost real-time events to you. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vedya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we have with us Shamik Ghosh, co-founder and chief executive officer of TrustTrace, platform for product traceability. He joins us from Stockholm, Sweden. Welcome, Shamik.
Hi, Vidya. Happy to be here.
Most of our regular listeners have heard the statistics about fast fashion and its impact on our climate and our planet. The numbers, they contribute about 4% to the greenhouse gases. Then there's water pollution, farm practices in case of natural fiber, or petroleum products in case of man-made fibers. The list goes on and on. So say I was manufacturing a t-shirt. Walk me through a life of a t-shirt.
So t-shirt is still quite a simple product there, but maybe we can just talk about it. So typically in the fashion supply chain, brand typically is working with a direct supplier, which in normal jargon is called, or in the fashion industry jargon is called, tier one supplier. Then there is a tier two supplier, which is supplying the fabric. Then there's a tier three supplier, which is supplying the yarn, or dyed yarn, or the dyeing process can be at a tier three level or tier two level also. Then you will have the raw material coming. And if it is a natural fiber, you will do some sort of a cleaning called ginning, and spinning comes after that. So typically a fashion supply chain will have at least tier 5 to tier 6, depending upon what kind of raw materials you are using. And this is for a very, very simple t-shirt. You are going as far as that there. The bill of material for a winter jacket, which is very, very, of course, popular in Sweden or Scandinavia, can consist of at least 25 different line items, which can be three different fabrics, padding, down feather, zippers, multiple different kind of buttons. Think about the complexity that you multiply that with so many different line items, and if you want to map it to tier 5 or tier 6 of that. And now on top of it, that you are adding millions of product which is to be produced. And in fashion, complexity is much higher because it is a very, very long supply chain. The supply chain for any garment can start as far as Australia, New Zealand, can travel via Asia, South Europe, and to US also. You're talking about billions of touch points for over throughout the year.
Oh, that sounds pretty complex. But why is this traceability really important? You know, why do I care where my fabric? All I want is a good quality of good value product.
So I think the word quality is the loaded word there. So what we consider quality has always been, okay, I will get certain quality that is assured to me by the brand and I will get it. But the quality has got a very different connotation, impact also on the supply chain. Fashion supply chain, as you rightly mentioned, is known to have a very, very high product environmental footprint, product social footprint, and product's ethical footprint.
Okay, so let's break it down to each of the components, right? So let's go social, because most of us, when we think about anything made in some other country, we're like, oh, did they use child labor? That's the first thing that all of us intuitively, it is jarring. It sounds not okay, unfair labor practice. So let's start about labor practices.
So just so that you know, all taken together, you are typically talking about 585 different attributes. It can be that complex, but typically a brand covers around 30 to 40 odd attributes across environmental, social, and ethical aspects of it. So social, let's dive deeper into that part of it, right? So it can consist of fair wages. Are you paying your employees the fair wages or living wages? That is the big controversy going on, that people should be paid living wages, not fair wages. Then you have got, do you allow the people to unionize so that they can at least have a voice for them to protest or say in the decision making across the supply chain? You are talking about child labor. You are talking about women exploitation, fair working conditions, and it is broadly around 10 to 15 such parameters that you are talking about. In an environment where only the brand knows the tier one supplier, so there is a lot of neglect that happens at a tier two, tier three, and a tier four supplier.
So what is the difference between fair wages and living wage? Living wage, I know, based on the cost of living index, it's pegged to that. But what is the difference between that and fair wages?
So, for example, the four co-founders of TrustWise come from India, and I will just maybe take India as a context, right? Indian government would have said that for any laborer or any worker who is working in a factory, suppose X dollars or converted into Indian rupees is the fair wage. This is a wage that is typically set by the government, and typically it is always kept a little bit on the lower side. Typically, a fair wage movement change adjustment only happens once in a 10 years. 10 years is a long period. So then you typically are talking about living wages, because when you are in a particular town or a city, you know what does it take to survive in that city. For example, Indian government will typically say, suppose 100 rupees per hour is the fair wage in state of Maharashtra. But we know that the wage in Bombay has to be much higher compared to another tier two city like Nagpur, right? How do you typically adjust to that kind of an aspects of it? That is why NGOs have always been saying that the wages in the supply chain should be set to the living wages rather than the fair wages, so that they can have a decent life outside the work hours also.
So fair wage is something that is regulated. It's similar to the minimum wages that we have in the United States.
That's right. Largely.
So let's move to the second part, the ethical part.
So ethical part, because a lot of product is also coming from sources from animals. So are you taking care of animal welfare? Are you taking care of their decent well-being aspects of it? So that is the most critical part. But apart from that, also generally the ethics of the business, that are you being a good neighbor? Do you take care of the local communities in that? For example, in the fashion industry, it is quite common people just import cheap labor and get the work done, right? But that means you are creating a friction in the society. So such kind of ethical behavior, and there are business ethics setups are there, and similar attributes are mentioned there. What are the focus that you want to do there?
Now we go on to the third part, the environmental impact. And that is the past year, people have been talking about it more than ever before, I feel.
So environmental, in fact, has got multiple different facets to it. And I think most of the people have been talking about greenhouse gases, but I think we should not neglect the other aspects of it, like eutrophication, like soil erosion, like land usage, like water intensity, or typically the freshwater intensity aspects, then chemical usage, which has got a significant impact on the local ecosystem there, and the impact on the rainforest, because rainforest that you lose now, even if you think of growing it back, it will take 70 years for it to come to at least 50% of the diversity that rainforest has. So biodiversity is also critical for us to keep in mind when you're talking about environmental. So you cannot be unidimensional about being greenhouse gases. You have to take ecosystem, because what you're destroying is an ecosystem, not one dimension of it.
I want to step back a little bit. Eutrophication is runoff from the fields, from the factories.
Eutrophication is caused because of excessive growth of plant and algal growth due to high amount of nutrients like fertilizers that run from the fields into the water.
This is such a complex subject, you know, just even when we started with just a t-shirt, and then moved on to a jacket.
That's right.
How did you get into this? Were you in the fashion industry? Were you in the IT technology area?
So we have a very, very, I think, interesting story. It took a big turn. So we are four co-founders. We used to work together in a large Indian IT services company called HCL, billions of dollars in revenue, and we were doing quite well in that setup. We had worked with a lot of automotive industrial companies in their digital transformation journey, and we were working together for almost 6 years before starting TrustRace. 2016, as I was finishing my executive MBA, one of the co-founders, Sarva, he actually was working in the UK, and he decided to move back to Coimbatore, which is in the southern part of India, very close to a big textile hub called Tirupur there. And we were quite curious to understand, because he was doing very well professionally and all, that why is he moving back? And he said that, hey, we have got a big farm, which is from three generations back with us, and my father is really affected because of the water pollution coming from Tirupur area, which is causing them to a lot of soil quality to go down, and this is affecting general farming, and he has been contesting this for the last few years there. So he went back to support it.
I should interject, when you see the t-shirt with the Made in India tag, most likely it's from Tirupur.
High probability of it, exactly. Then he said he's going back, and that triggered a thought that, so two co-founders are based in Sweden, in Stockholm, and the other two co-founders are based in India. So for me and Rishi, who are based in Sweden, we see a significant high awareness about nature, and nature belongs to everybody. We should protect the nature, take care of the nature. Whereas we have not seen such responsible practices being followed in India or Asia, largely, right? And that triggered a thought that maybe we can bring a force of good by connecting the businesses in Scandinavia to do their production in India to do this. What sounds very, very simple, but when we started talking to many of these sustainability role models in Scandinavia, they said that we will never outsource our production to India because we will lose control on the supply chain. When we work with local production, we are able to ensure that there is no chemical pollution, there is no water pollution, there is no air pollution kind of thing. We can control them very well. If we move the production to India or Asia, we have to keep on flying, and generally that is against our philosophy. So we said that through data technologies, we can actually bring almost real-time events to you. Wouldn't that be interesting? And that is what the journey of TrustRace started. We then started building a complete data platform for them about taking care of the factory level metrics, which is to do with social and environmental aspect, and also to cover the complete material movement right from the tier 7 to the tier 1. And that is what we call material integrity.
So you have enabled buyers in Sweden to source from India, which is 3,000-5,000 miles away, and be assured that what they are getting is what it is. How have you done that? I understand you're using technology, but you need people on the ground, right?
First, let's understand what is the challenge that the brands have. So we are a brand-centric platform. We believe the brands are a key actor in this whole fashion and textile world because they have the maximum value capture in terms of profit. They are the face of the whole supply chain to the general public, right? So we target the fashion brands to sell our solution. There is enough infrastructure existing in the fashion world. You have got so many certification bodies, so many standards, so many audit bodies, NGO activists, right? What is not present is at a product level, if you want to know where the product is made, how it is made, who has made it, and what is the general impact of it. It is tremendously difficult for anybody to do that. Most of the brands are doing that by putting manual effort, production controllers who go and ask for certificates and all. But as human beings, we are not programmed to check. At a lot level, you typically get 70 certificates. Most of the brands don't even open more than 2 certificates on an average. Though the data is coming in, nobody is processing it. This whole game, the organization of data plays a very, very significant role. And the problem that we are solving is that we are organizing that data at a product level, because we believe product is the fundamental unit of sustainable transformation. If you want to transform your business, if you want to transform the world, start with one product. Get that product to be sustainable, it being produced in sustainable factories, being produced using sustainable raw materials. That is the battle won. So we then help these brands to know the complete story of the product right from the source to the end garment, and then work with the supply chain to improve the maybe the greenhouse gas emission, maybe the land usage, maybe the water attributes. And for that, there are various different certifications that they push the supply chain to go. So yes, it increases the cost of compliance, but it is, we have to understand, for the future proofing of the business and the future proofing of the planet and the people on it, I think these capital investments are necessary for them to do.
So you've taken this very complex problem and taken the data which was most likely available to the businesses and put it in a platform where a single product can be traced from the start to the finish.
So I will maybe, let me break the solution into three simple things, right? So when a brand starts a journey of traceability or sustainability, the first thing they need to do is get their supply chain most fully traceable. What do I mean by that is they should know at a product level, who is the tier one supplier, who is the tier two supplier, who are the tier three suppliers, and subsequently. Then you know that in your supply chain, there will be certain red flags or the amber zones. You then start working with, for example, if you are sourcing a fabric from Asian country, you invariably will be using thermal power stations or electricity produced through thermal power stations, which means your carbon footprint is very high. How do you incentivize the supplier to move to renewable energy? So this data will come, and then you ask the supplier, hey, can you start putting in wind farms? Can you start using solar panels and all, et cetera, et cetera, right? It's a journey. So this is the second aspect of it. So first aspect was value chain mapping. Then you do the supplier performance improvement. And finally, there is a lot of falsification of data happening. You're dealing with sustainable materials. If you are having organic cotton, there is 6 times the amount of the organic cotton claimed in a year than produced.
Yes, there was this big scandal about GARTS.
Exactly.
Which is a German company, was certifying through subcontractors at the farm level.
Exactly. So when that happens in our platform, you are able to create a digital chain of custody. For the factories, they have to record the input, raw materials in production, what is the wastage, what is the output that you have produced in the platform. It is not foolproof, but the probability for them to cheat reduces significantly, because in the platform now I'm bringing, like in the platform, we have got 40 brands using our platform and over 8,000 suppliers spread across 75 different countries and covering almost 26,000 factories as of now. Now, if one factory has done a cheating, and if we, our system is able to detect it, the red flag is visible to all the brands. And that is a very, very big deterrent for most of the suppliers in case they are going towards falsification of data.
So these suppliers, they are shared between brands, or that information about the red flag is shared between the brands who are on your portal? It's like, say you have a Google review, but in this closed environment.
So we use a bunch of best of breed solutions to achieve that. We are also GDPR compliant, which is this European data privacy law there, which means all the data is owned by the suppliers as they input their data on their behalf. But if the same supplier used by two different brands, a supplier will say, use my same profile to share the information to them. And let us also understand, we are a great force for many of the suppliers to be able to be visible to the right brands.
I was wondering, like, do you have a supplier preferred list, you know, which will elevate these suppliers who want to comply, want to be sustainable, to have access to the brands that you serve?
So we do something called using certain industry standard principles. We do a sustainability rating, 1 star to 5 star, 5 star being the best. And also we do the supplier rating. We also provide a lot of granular details about a supplier, like what kind of machinery they have, what kind of value processes they deal with, what kind of certificates they have. So if a supplier comes into our platform, in fact, the brand can say that, okay, I want recycled polyester, so-and-so quantity, so-and-so kind of a quality metric. Where can I find it? And they can get a list of such suppliers in the platform. So it is a great way because the suppliers do want to work with responsible brands because then they bring a virtuous cycle to their business. Otherwise, discussion between the brand and the supplier is very lopsided, favoring the brand. And through our platform, we are able to elevate a supplier to almost a partnership model because the need for brand is also as high because they have to increase their percentage of sustainable products. And there are so many new regulations which are coming and hitting the brands. Recently, there was this penalty on Walmart and Kohl's for $5.5 million because they were wrongly claiming it to be bamboo when it was actually rayon. They need to find the right supplier and have the right data at their fingertips because otherwise an FTC or European Union Commission is going to put a significant amount of fine on them.
Point that you highlighted and which most consumers are not aware of is the power dynamics between the supplier and the brand. And there are suppliers who sometimes lose an order for pennies on the dollar, you know, like just for, because the brand is buying a million pieces and even if they're off by 50 cents, they will shift suppliers. Because from the brand's point of view, that's $500,000 in savings. So I'm going to move. So opening up this dialogue can make it a better environment for everybody to operate in.
And we see a definite shift towards that, Vidya. So if I look at around when we started in 2016, most of the brands will have their sustainability head to be a typically a marketing or a communication person who is communicating more, trying to sort of act like a first line of defense there. But now during the COVID, we see most of the sustainability heads, they are typically coming from the production side or the buying side. And on top of it, in this role, they are reporting into the chief compliance officer who reports